Kevin Keith here for KNSRadioNetwork.com. Happy Thursday morning to you. Thanks for joining us. Want to thank our community-minded partners. We've got right off the bat here at KNS, we've got Heather's Flowers of Frankfort, Dysinger's Handyman and Landscaping, The Oasis Frankfort, Baber's Honest John Tree Service, Granny's Goodies in Mulberry, Gym City Junction Frankfort, Probite Computers, plus Pizza Hut of Frankfort, all from the KNS Radio Network. A reminder, all of our past interviews after we air them on the air is always available at knsradionetwork.com/interviews. You can also listen live there and check out the latest local news there as well. Just click on the news tab. I'm Kevin Keith, and there are some of those stories that you come across as a journalist or reporter in your life, and maybe it has never affected you in a way from anything from being from the community, being close to the community, knowing someone involved. And I think a lot of us in the Clinton County area can certainly attest that the Delphi murders of 7 years ago of Abby Williams and Liberty German certainly touched the entire community of Carroll County, obviously, all their surrounding neighbors in Clinton County. And it seems like everybody is following this story. And as a result, since we just started KNS Radio Network about 4 or 5 months ago, we're looking to branch out and not always do breaking news, but as we get a chance here on the morning show here for news and commentary, we want to branch out a little bit and take a deeper dive into some things that either affect us or something we all have opinions on or just feel compelled to follow. And with that being said, I reached out to Rick Snay. He's the host of the podcast you can find. It's called Delphi After Dark. Rick, first off, thanks for sitting down with me today.
Well, thanks for having me. Appreciate it, Kevin.
I got a small time frame here, a little timeline I want to go by, but I want to step way back, back to 2017. Why did you become involved and feel so compelled to bring information relating to the Abby Williams and Liberty German murders from 7 years ago in Little Carroll County? What compelled you, Rick?
Well, I've always been the squeaky wheel type. I've always been one to want to get involved in things. And when this happened, I was living in Indianapolis. I'm from the Logansport area, and I grew up, I've visited Delphi many times. Mm-hmm. And when this happened, I was kind of interested in the outcome of it because I'm a true crime person, and, you know, it was from the area that I'm from. But then before too long, I found out that an old classmate of mine that I was good friends with in school was actually related to one of the victims, and that kind of brought me in a little bit closer. And then I started my YouTube channel, and since then, just through a natural progression of people that I've met along the way, I've gotten very involved personally in the case, and it's kind of taken over my life.
Well, it sounds like it has, as you and I have spoke a couple times here prior to going on the air together, and you've been very good to share literal details where it has taken over your life. And I don't know how much you are able to or could talk about the personal situation with your wife's boss. And I just thought that was important to put out there, or are you comfortable with that?
Yes, I can explain exactly what that's all about. It's kind of a two-pronged thing. Mm-hmm. Some people in YouTube get jealous of success and so forth, and if they have a theory and you somehow prove that theory wrong, they get very vengeful. And right now I'm dealing with actual literal death threats that were just sent mm-hmm. to me on Facebook Messenger. But where this happened was my wife who we are now estranged. We are no longer living together.
Mm-hmm.
She, you know, we've been married. We've been together for 7 years, married for 4 years, and she was employed with the Marion County Courts.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point during this whole thing, when there was a leak of not just photos, but also information, crime scene information and prosecution, defense, discovery files and so forth, I actually was getting a lot of this information given to me. And people started saying that it was because my wife was somehow getting access.
Oh.
So there were actual threats online about my wife, you know, people saying, you know, we should go to her job and meet her there and everything.
Wow.
And confront her and all that.
Wow.
And they started writing letters to my wife's boss and to the governor of Indiana and the mayor of Indianapolis, and the Supreme Court of Indiana.
Goodness.
I mean, it's crazy.
Wow.
So my, and then in March, so I like to refer to the Ides of March, it was about that time.
Mm-hmm.
I was supposed to testify about the photo leaks in court up in Allen County. And I never got to testify because I was thrown out of the courthouse. They say for creating a disturbance. Judge Gold said that I had been told by, I had argued with security in the back of the room and been told to sit down, and that I created a disturbance in the courtroom. All of that is absolutely 100% false. I came out and spoke out against that and called her a liar publicly.
Mm-hmm.
And I have witnesses lined up, you know, but I am banned from participating in any more Delphi activities. Well, then a few days later, my wife gets this email telling her that I cannot refer to her in my program. If I have to monitor the chat, and if anybody has referred to her, I have to delete it. And, you know, my wife up to that point had been a popular figure on my channel. She was, you know, everybody knew who she was.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of the members had actually, we would make performance videos. We were both were performers, and we'd play and sing and everything. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, so she was very popular on my channel. People would ask me all the time how she was doing. And in order to comply with their wishes, I would have had to take down most of my material, which I think was their goal to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So my wife and I had a, you know, they actually gave her something in writing, which now you have because I sent you that image.
Yes.
Where they say that it would be a shame if her employment were to be compromised due to something I said or did online.
Yes.
So.
Yes, I have that document you sent to me, and facts are sticky things, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to, you had referenced a minute ago, Rick, about where there being so many moving parts and things move so fast sometimes. Let's go back to March, and then we'll get into some of the other bullet points. March of this year, Fran Gohl, who was formerly the judge on the case and now is not, you were, as you just mentioned, kicked out essentially of court.
Yes. What happened is one of the people that was the leading people calling my wife a leaker, he had been terrorizing my wife and I for months online, you know, calling us names, calling me at all hours of the night, trying to get me to answer the phone.
Mm.
He actually accused me publicly of molesting my daughter.
Oh, my goodness.
And you know, that was on Anthony Greeno's program.
Right.
And, you know, I told this guy, I said, look, you can say what you want about me, but when you start in on my wife, the next time I see you, we are going to go somewhere private and we're going to settle this man to man.
Right.
And he showed up at the hearing that day. I was there by the request of David Hennessy to testify. Now, he hadn't subpoenaed me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm guessing the reason he didn't subpoena me is either that he forgot to, or he was trying to keep it so he didn't have to tip his hand what they wanted me to testify about.
Yes, yes.
So I was not subpoenaed, and when we broke for lunch, I had gone up to the front of the courtroom because I have become friends with Kathy Allen, Richard Allen's wife,
mm-hmm.
and I talked to her all the time, you know, by text and stuff, and I hadn't seen her for a few months, and I went up to say hi to her. And for the first time since I've known her, I saw happiness, hope, joy, actual, you know, wow. Like she actually could see a light at the end of the tunnel. Mm-hmm. And she grabbed my hands and squeezed them, and she said, you know, thank you, Rick, thank you, and everything. And I said, hey, you know, just doing what I feel is right.
Right.
And then I hugged her, and I said, well, I'll see you later. And she said, are you leaving? And I looked around, and I'm seeing all these court officials just staring at me. And the people over in the section where the Patties and the Williams family and everything, the German family, and they're all just glaring at me. And I told her, I looked at Kathy, and I said, yeah, I think one way or another I'm leaving. So I go downstairs, and the guy, Noe, that, you know, that was, you know, saying stuff about my wife, mm-hmm. he walks behind somebody and leans in and goes, Ricky, Dicky, Leaky, Leaky. And that's something he'd been chanting online all the time that he thinks gets to me. So I smiled real big and said, hey, Noe. And all of a sudden, these people jumped in between us and were pushing us apart like it was some big deal. And then another creator that I'd never met in person before grabbed me by the arm and said, hello, Mr. Snay. You don't know me, but I'm getting you out of here. And she pulled me to the end of this hallway. And we were standing down there talking quietly when the superintendent of the building came over and told me that I had to leave. And they followed me out of the building. There are videos where you can see, like, you know, 10 officers following me out of the building.
Wow. Must have perceived you as a threat. Well, that's escorting. That's escorting you out of the building.
When I got down to the corner, Kevin, I turned around, looked at him, I said, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Man, what do you guys do when you get a real badass?
Well, they probably got backup for that, too. We're talking with Rick Snay. He's the host of the podcast Delphi After Dark. You can find that on YouTube. Rick, for those who may be joining us, and again, who don't have the time or can't follow this story as closely as maybe they want to, could you give us a run through of what happened back in February of 2017?
Well, in February of 2017, we all know what Indiana, now we know what a snow day is in school. Mm-hmm. Used to mean that we got snowed in and couldn't go to school. Now it means that they had days set aside for snow days that they didn't have to use, so the kids get them off anyway. Mm-hmm. And that particular day, it was the day before Valentine's Day, it was a Monday, and it happened to be a snow day. Mm-hmm. And Libby and Abby decided to go out to the bridge. Now, there's a lot of speculation as to why they were going out to the bridge. But, you know, the main thing is they decided to go out to the bridge. It was just the two of them. Mm-hmm. They were kind of discovered to be missing right around 3:30 when Libby's father showed up to pick them up, and he couldn't reach her by phone. He walked through the trails a little bit, almost to the bridge. He met somebody coming back from the bridge, you know, and asked him, are there two girls down there? Mm-hmm. So quickly, the community got involved. I mean, I was shocked by how many people got together, how quickly it happened.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, working down here in Indianapolis. I was hearing all this on the radio. And when I got home and I was looked at the news, I mean, here's all these people out searching. Mm-hmm. And they didn't find anything the first night. They had dogs on the way from somewhere. I mean, the only thing I know for a fact is that it is true. Dogs were on their way. Some people say they were coming from Illinois. Some people say that they had them in some place here in Indiana. But they were tracking dogs, not, you know, cadaver dogs. Mm-hmm. So there are two different types of dogs.
Right.
These dogs would have followed the scent from the bridge to wherever it ended up. But so Blesenby, the sheriff at the time of Carroll County, decided to call the dogs off, send them home. You know, we don't need them. We're going to call the search off. It's getting too dark, and we'll start searching again tomorrow. So the next day, they started searching again, and about noon, the girls were found about a quarter mile from the bridge. Strangely enough, in an area that many people said they had searched the day before, and they weren't there the day before. But apparently the state's official story is that they were killed right there.
You know, I had heard that, not to cut you off, but I had heard that. Now that you mentioned that, you're not the first person that said that area was searched the day prior, and then they miraculously find them the next day.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that the defense has found the people that searched that area the night before. Mm-hmm. And they have depositioned them or plan to bring them into court. Yes. Because I've heard from many people that they weren't there that day.
Wow. All right. Yeah, go ahead.
Since then, they went through, they put out the old guy sketch, which everybody's seen. The guy looks like he's got, you know, the newsboy cap on and everything. And he looks like kind of like Ernest Borgnine almost.
Right.
And, you know, he looks like a typical, you know, bad guy. You know?
Right.
And then they used that image for 2 years. And then after 2 years, they all of a sudden decided that they were going to use this young guy who is obviously not the same person. Even though now Doug Carter will insist that if you take one picture and put the other picture over the top of it, it's Richard Allen. Neither one of those pictures is Richard Allen. Mm. There are many sketches that were done that day. Sure. Why haven't we seen the other ones publicly? I've seen them. Mm. One of them looks exactly like a fellow named Elvis Fields from Rushville. One of them is obviously Richard Allen. And one of them looks a little bit like Mike Patty. You know, not saying he was there, he was at work.
Right.
But, you know, maybe somebody saw him searching and thought, that guy looks a little strange because, you know, right. He was very concerned. You know?
Right.
So they finally settled on a guy from Peru named Kegan Klein, who had apparently been talking to Libby as part of this catfishing thing he was doing, pretending to be this sexy guy with tattoos and a Porsche and everything. Mm-hmm. Kegan actually was just trying to get girls to send him dirty pictures.
Okay.
And what happened when they raided him early on, he was one of the first people they looked at. Mm-hmm. And they raided him early on. And if you look at overseas news reports from those raids, the FBI is quoted as saying, these guys are cleared. We don't think they had anything to do with the murders. Now, from being personal friends now with Tony Klein, I can also tell you the day of the raid, Tony Klein voluntarily gave them a hair sample, a DNA sample, said, you can take my blood, whatever you want to do. He took a polygraph and passed it. And then once again, when they let Kegan go, even though he admitted and had all these things on his phone, these, you know, child porn on his phones, they let him go. He moved to Vegas, and for a couple of years, he was like off the map. Nobody knew where he was. So finally, he came back to Indiana. They arrest him. They put out a message in the middle of the night connecting this Anthony Schatz profile to the Delphi investigation. And the way they do it, it's really slick. They say, while investigating the Delphi murders, we came across this profile. They don't say he has anything to do with it. They just say, while investigating.
Yeah.
And at the time, they're asking for people, do you know anything about this profile? And at the time, they knew who it was because they had the guy in their jail cell. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
So they were trying to pile it on from the public who may hear something. Yeah, wow.
Mm-hmm. Each part of this investigation has been carefully crafted theater, Kevin. It's just been theater from start to finish. The press conferences are all dramatic and everything, you know.
I hate to hear that from a judicial standpoint of whether it would be myself or you or someone finds mm-hmm. themselves in this position, particularly when you get into some of the deeper aspects and this person doesn't like that person and this political affiliation could be more convenient for this person. You know, right. It's that we're talking dangerous stuff here.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
So
this thing, it does have many tentacles, like Doug Williams or Doug Carter once said.
Mm-hmm.
It has many tentacles.
So law enforcement tried for at least, from what I remember, and again, I'm not as well versed on this, at least a year or two to really pin this on Kegan Klein.
Yes, they were either trying to pin it on Kegan or they were trying to pin it on his dad. Mm-hmm. Now, if you listen to some of Tony Klein's history and you look at pictures of him and everything, he looks like he might be like this big, mean, violent guy. Mm-hmm. And he does have a reputation for violence in the past. But nowadays, I've gotten to know the guy quite well. I consider him one of my best friends, and he's just a big teddy bear is all he is now. You know, right. I mean, he wouldn't hurt me. Right. He just wants to be left alone in peace. He would never do anything like murdering two children, and neither would Kagan. Mm-hmm. But this whole thing got blown out of proportion by people who were trying to make their career out of a podcast. And unfortunately, the local media ate it up like honey and ended up giving these particular people just what they wanted. It's kind of sad.
So in the summer of 2022, which would be about 2 years ago this month, law enforcement searched the Wabash River for at least 2 or 3 weeks. And I remember this. Rick.
Oh, yeah. It went on.
It was a big deal, yeah. And there was like, we kept waiting for some kind of additional evidence or something more to maybe tie Richard Allen to this. But it was a big nothing burger, wasn't it?
Yes, and what's interesting about that is what was going on behind the scenes. And the reason I know what was going on behind the scenes now is that right before Kagan Klein was sent to prison, he let me talk to him. He granted me an interview from his jail cell. And, you know, because he knew that I'd become friends with his father, and his dad won't talk to him anymore. So he wanted to ask me how he was doing and everything. And we talked about this, and I know exactly what was going on behind the scenes now, and it explains everything. See, what was happening was Kagan had become some kind of folk hero or something to some of these internet women who become fascinated with killers. And they all thought he was part of the that he had some kind of culpability in Delphi.
Oh.
There were at least three or four of them, and if you watch the CW Crime Nation documentary, Town Torn Apart by Murder, you'll see one of them was a woman named Kelly Brown. There were some others. He was telling each one, he told me, he said, Rick, they were buying me food, you know, they were putting money on my commissary, getting my cigarettes, you know, and things like that. He said one of them was telling me she was going to sell her car and bail me out of jail. He said I would have told them anything they wanted to hear. So if they wanted to hear that his dad was a killer, he was telling them that.
Wow.
If they wanted to hear that he didn't have anything to do with it, he was telling them that, you know. And he started telling this story, I don't know if you remember or not, about the red Jeep, that he supposedly sat in a red Jeep while his dad murdered the kids. And that they threw the knife in the Wabash River when they were coming back over the bridge. So that's why they were searching. When they didn't find anything, Doug Carter came down in a helicopter to scare Kagan, and they took him to Grissom Air Force Base Prison, Miami County Correctional. They took him, and they showed him general population, and he said that, I believe it was Detective Vito, said to him, if you don't start leveling with us, we're going to put you down there in general population and watch you get raped and beaten every day until you're dead. So they sat him down, and he said, look, guys, I've been BSing. I don't know a darn thing about Delphi. I had nothing to do with it. I don't know who did it. And that was the end of that. And here we are 3 weeks away from an election, a month away from an election. What's going to happen? Well, on my channel, I predicted something big was going to happen right before the election. Sure enough, about 2 weeks before the election, Richard Allen was arrested, a man who was on no one's radar.
I remember that as well, that it's like we were all at the radio station I used to work at here in Frankfort. We were all looking at each other, and we had followed the case pretty close to where we were familiar with most of the players. And we all looked at each other and said, who?
Yeah.
Who's this guy?
And might I say, shame on any radio station that would let you slip away.
Well, I appreciate that, Rick. There's a little more to the story there. We'll talk about that.
Yeah. Well, there's always a little more.
Indeed. We're talking with Rick Snay. He's a host of the podcast Delphi After Dark. You can find that on YouTube. Let's cut to the chase here on one thing. You, as a lot of people do, there's, you know, it's pick a side. listen to the evidence of what they will let you see on WLFI or the local news. People have strong opinions about this one way or the other. I'm increasingly finding more people, Rick, who think Richard Allen is very much innocent, very much not guilty, and is, for lack of a better term, a patsy in all this.
And that's exactly what's going on. This man, let me ask you this. They say he parked at the old CPS building, and he walked and committed the murders and everything. And then they say that Dan Doolin or Thomas Skinner, I don't know which, but in the PCA it says Dan Doolin, took his statement that he was parked at this place, you know, old PCS building, mm-hmm. or CPS building. Now, in 2019, at the April press conference, they said, we are looking for information about the person who was parked here that day. Mm-hmm. And you mean to tell me Dan Doolin, who was standing in that room, didn't go, oh, wait a minute. Yeah, I interviewed that guy.
Yeah.
Nah. As I like to say on my program, that dog don't hunt. That dog is a pacifist.
Right. Well, I've talked to a couple reporters who have done their own investigative reporting, even going to, I believe it was, Mr. Allen, he worked for, was it Dollar General or CVS?
CVS, yeah.
CVS.
He was a pharmaceutical tech.
Yes. And one of the reporters, she went there. She talked to his coworkers off the record. And there's not a single person there that believes he's guilty of this either.
No, there's not. I've spoken to several people there in Delphi many times that, you know, the funny thing is, a few months back when I first really started, you know, I mean, before March, when I first really started pushing hard for publicity to this, you know, the fact that he's being railroaded, mm-hmm. you could read the Court TV comment sections and go on Reddit, go on Facebook, you know, look at all this stuff. And it was like 80% believed he was guilty.
Yes.
But now, as more stuff has come out, you look around the country, the only place you're going to find a majority that think he's guilty is somewhere in Indiana, because that the local news is so controlled, mm-hmm. and law enforcement has been controlling that narrative from day one.
Yes.
You know,
under the guise of a fact-based press release oftentimes.
Yes, yes. And the lack of information in this case is what has led to all of these different conspiracy theories and these different, you know, stories. There are still people that will say, well, Kagan Klein said that he had a meeting set up with them at the bridge that day. No, that's not true at all. What that came from is when Murder Sheet very irresponsibly put out those Kagan Klein transcripts, they didn't explain to their audience, who probably are just laymen and don't understand legal things, mm-hmm. that this was a police interrogation where they are allowed to lie. They can straight up tell you, well, we got your DNA and fingerprints at the crime scene.
Yes.
They can say that.
Yes.
It's legal. So they told him that a girl who was a friend of Libby's told them that she called him and said, hey, did you hear what happened to Libby? And he said, no, what? And she said, well, they disappeared on Monday, and they were found on Tuesday. They were murdered. And she says that Kagan said, oh, my God, I was supposed to meet her, but she didn't show up that day. But that's just, made up by a teenage girl that wanted to insert herself into the investigation somehow. Right. You know, Kagan told him right then and there, no, that is a lie. And he used a particular word to emphasize that it was a lie.
Right. Right. So we mentioned the election back in October of 2022, and I remember thinking something that didn't pass the smell test either at the time. And again, I was kind of following this from afar. I want to jump into something here that has a little more teeth And when you were telling me a couple days ago, Rick, on the phone, I absolutely could not believe it. But after we've talked, I've since come to believe it, that around the time, and correct me if I'm wrong, a couple months ago or earlier this year, you received crime scene photos that were leaked to you.
Yeah, that was back in September, I believe, of last year.
Okay.
September or early October, one of the two. Or it was, you know, the fall, mm-hmm. toward the fall. Mm-hmm. I'd have to look at my calendar to be absolutely sure. But there were a total of 9 crime scene photos that had apparently been someone named Mitch Westerman, who's been charged and he's going through the legal process, apparently used to work for Andy Baldwin, who is one of the defense attorneys. And Andy Baldwin had this policy of once family, always family. And, you know, he doesn't like watch people around the office or lock stuff up. And apparently Westerman walked in and saw these crime scene photos, either lying, there's stories lying out on a table. Some of them were on a computer screen. At least one of the photos I got was a picture of a picture on a computer screen, because I can see a cursor in the picture.
Mm-hmm.
But there were apparently 9, and I got 4 of them. And the 4 that were passed to me are the ones that I believe are the most important ones that really tell the whole story about what happened. And I believe that's why they were passed to me. And other YouTubers got a hold of some of them. Eventually they were used on someone's program, and then YouTube shut that channel down. But I was one of the first people, and I actually am the first person that came forward and said, you know, hey, I have these things.
So. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about that. If you could give us a little synopsis, Rick, of what the photos showed you and what they told you, and all the way down to how it relates to the Odinism, which we started hearing about a couple years ago.
Right. Before I elaborate on that, I want to make sure that people understand, when we talk about this Odinism thing, you know, it's not a bunch of people walking through woods, you know, with torches going, oh, wee, oh, or anything like that. It's nothing, you know,
right.
Creepy black magic type thing. What it is, what it comes down to, is basically these guys are a gang. They call themselves the Vinlanders Social Club. They're a white supremacist group. They're a hate group. They're watched. They are being watched by the Joint Task Force on Domestic Terrorism.
Wow.
So they claim to be Odinists because, you know, I try to tell people, the Odinists, these people, they don't see their religion as being like a redemptive religion. Like Christians look and say, well, Jesus died for my sins, I am redeemed.
Mm-hmm.
These guys don't look at Odin that way, or Thor, or any of them. They look at those gods more as examples of what they want to live up to.
Okay.
So with that in mind, the pictures that were sent to me, there were 4. There was a picture of Libby, and which, if you know about the case, she was found nude, but these were very tastefully edited, so there was nothing showing.
Mm-hmm.
But there was Libby, Abby, and then the other 2 photos. One was just the top of Abby's head, showing what was, you know, above her head. And the other one was one of Abby's legs went underneath the other one.
Mm-hmm.
The bodies themselves were positioned in tarot card positions. Libby's was mimicking the magician, and Abby's was mimicking the hanged man position. And the hanged man in tarot cards is said to represent Odin.
Okay.
Right. And that was, her arms were up, like almost, I always say, like she was trying to do the chicken dance, you know, where you put your arms up and whap, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then she was dressed in Libby's clothing. And there was no blood anywhere on the clothing or on Abby. There was some blood on Libby's face, and a little bit, it looked like it had been swirled on her body. And other than that, no blood around the bodies. No blood at all. and there were no drag marks. So these bodies were not drugged to where they were. They were carried and placed there. And I find it really hard to believe that Richard Allen could do that by himself, especially in only 104 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So the sticks that were laid on top of them were in no way random or just tossed on them. They are definitely shapes. And if you look at them and compare them to a runic alphabet, you'll find that they basically are spelling out Hail Odin, and then Libby is reaching up toward the tree, which trees, again, you know, represent Odin. So it's just all very, it just seems too planned to be
too convenient.
Random or, nobody gets this elaborate to try and throw people off.
Right, absolutely. You have went on to even say, go as far, Rick, as saying that the photos you've seen that were leaked to you indicates extreme evidence that there was more than one person involved with these murders.
Yes, definitely. Because, as I said, with no drag marks, that means the bodies had to have been placed there. Mm-hmm. Some people say, maybe he just used a stick and brushed the leaves in it, to hide the drag marks. Well, the problem with that is this is the state's theory. Little short 5'4" Richard Allen pulls his gun out and says, down the hill. Mm-hmm. He takes the girls to the creek, crosses the creek, which on all three of these people, Libby, Abby, and Richard Allen, are 5'4".
Mm-hmm.
So at the time, if you look, the creek would have probably been about chest high to them.
Mm.
We're looking at least mid body.
Right.
So the clothing would have been wet. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The hill where they are found, behind that hill, they would have had to have gone quite a ways down to get to where they could climb that bank easily. There's no mud on the clothing, like they had a hard time getting up.
I've always wondered that too.
Mm-hmm. there is another way. If they were taken off the bridge and then there's a drive right there, and if there was a car waiting, they could have been put in a car, taken somewhere else, and held until that night when the search was over and nobody else was out there. Then that's when they would have done their ritual thing they wanted to do, mm-hmm. And the interesting thing about this is that people that hear about the Odinism theory, they're like, well, it's just some crazy thing the defense made up. Well, no, that's not where it came from at all.
Mm-hmm.
The Odin theory came from an investigation by three investigators who were working for the Joint Terrorism Task Force. They happened to come across Elvis Fields, Johnny Messer, Rod Abrams, and they heard about Patrick Westfall and Brad Holder, who Westfall and Holder were two of the original people that were questioned right away after the murders, after the bodies were discovered. They were questioned in the first week of the investigation. Yes. And these interrogations were recorded by Carroll County. Of course, they lost them, so we can't hear them.
Yes, heard that too. That's, again, convenient.
Mm-hmm. You have Elvis Fields telling his sister in Rushville on the 14th, the day the girls' bodies were discovered, that he had done something bad and he was going away for a long time. He told her that he had been with two girls on a bridge, that there was somebody else there with him, and that the girls had ended up being killed, and that he had spit on one of the bodies, and that there was a girl named Abigail, and she was a troublemaker, so he gave her horns. When I read that, that's when I realized what that picture was showing me with the top of her head. She had two long sticks at the top of her head that looked like the horns that you see if you look at these Odinist mythology, like demons, they have these long, straight horns,
mm-hmm.
And that's what it looked like. So how did he know the day after the murders what the crime scene looked like if he hadn't been there?
Wow. And authorities have spoken with him and handfuls of others?
Oh, yes. They spoke with him. He told both of his sisters various stories about Delphi. They were both polygraphed, and they both passed. So regardless of whether or not what he was saying is true, he did say it to his sisters, you know. And right. when they talked to him, you know, he said that he had been at a hospital all day in Muncie visiting a friend, and that was proven to be false.
Oh, wow.
And they asked him if he would take a polygraph exam, and he at first said he would. And then when it was time for that to happen, instead, a lawyer came in representing him and said he would not be taking any polygraph exams.
Oh, wow. Again, convenience.
Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing here is Brad Holder, one of the people that is in the list, you know, the circle of suspects,
mm-hmm.
his son, Logan, was dating Abby Williams at the time that the girls were murdered.
Oh, wow. Was dating her?
Yes. And when he would come, they live in Logansport, so when he would come to Delphi, it is known that he would contact her and have her meet him somewhere, like at the park or something like that. So, could he have called her or texted her and told her, meet us at the bridge? Because the funny thing is, even though several people will tell you that Abby had a phone, even though I have seen myself in the documents that the state talks about the girls' phones, plural,
mm-hmm.
we are still being told that Abby did not have a phone. What is on that phone that they don't want us to see?
Well, that's a great question. It leads me to my next question, which I'm sure will probably lead me to another question. what, Rick, what do you think, just the gut reaction, the gut thought, what's the motivation for law enforcement to not follow up on all this compelling evidence and what seems like piles and piles of evidence and reasonable doubt causing suspects? What's the motivation for not wanting to see this thing through?
Well,
and I know you'd be speculating on that, but it's hard yeah. for me to wrap my head around it. I think it's, you know, oftentimes it's pretty logical if you think about most things in life.
Let's put it this way. When I think about the illicit economy, so to speak, the underground, the black market, that sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
one of the most lucrative businesses that you can be in right now in Indiana or anywhere in the Midwest, really, is the production of methamphetamine.
Mm-hmm.
The things that you need to produce methamphetamine, a lot of the chemicals are very similar to the ones that you use when you are a hog farmer.
Right.
Hog farming is one of the biggest industries in Carroll County.
Right.
Now, if you were going to have a large operation in a small county, you probably would need to have a few wheels greased before you could get by with things.
Right.
And I suspect that there's a lot of kissing cousins, so to speak, between law enforcement and the underground, the bad guys in Carroll County.
Wow.
And the surrounding area. Mm-hmm. You know, not too long before Delphi, remember, we had four young African-American girls killed in a fire, and let's call it murder because the fire was determined to be arson.
That's right.
In Flora.
That's right.
In Flora, Indiana. Okay. There were four young girls killed, African-American girls killed in this fire.
Mm-hmm.
The house belonged to a man who has actually had a few of these fires happen, and he's always collected his insurance and everything. I have seen documents, which I still possess, that show that people have testified, have come and told law enforcement that this particular man has bragged to them about ways that you can start fires by putting newspapers in outlets and sort of stuff like that. And also, Elvis Fields talked about starting a fire where a couple of girls were killed. So if you have a group of people that do something wrong in a county like Carroll, the word could get around real quick.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
And one of the ways that could happen, obviously, you have, and again, we're just speculating here, but you have Becky Patty, who appraised the house that burned down in Florida where the girls were killed just weeks before the fire. Now, I'm not saying Becky had anything to do with it. I don't go there, you know.
Right.
But what if somehow she found something out and Libby somehow discovered that and told Abby, and Abby mentioned it to Logan Holder, and, you know.
Yeah.
You know, if the Vinlanders were the ones that were responsible for this fire, which we have no proof of that. You know,
right.
we can't, you know, it's all speculation, like I say.
Right.
But it is interesting that the polygraph person who polygraphed Elvis's sisters and who polygraphed Amber Holder, Brad Holder's wife, who also said that Brad Holder told her Pat Westfall killed the girls. All these polygraphs were done by the same person that did the polygraphs in the Flora investigation. Her name was Stephanie Thompson, I think. She was killed in a fire in Monticello with her daughter shortly after she did all these polygraphs.
Wow.
So, you know, then you have Greg Ferency, who was the FBI, working with the FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force, who discovered the Elvis Fields link. He was killed in a shootout with a former corrections official in Terre Haute not too long ago.
This is unbelievable, Rick.
It is.
I mean, wow, the tentacles continue to grow, no doubt on that. Before we wrap it up here, I wanted to give you a chance to say anything that you may have not been able to cover here with me asking some questions of you and myself trying to be up to speed on this. Is there any more, is there anything else that you would like to share? Is there a piece of evidence that you're looking for that you think may be able to help Mr. Allen down the road? Or is it looking like right now, as long as it's in the court of public opinion, at least, that doesn't really matter? Is there any hope for getting that man out of prison?
Yes, I believe so, because honestly, I'm a trial watcher from way back, and Carroll County doesn't have it. They are not going to be able to convict him. There is no jury that's going to go on this evidence and say that, beyond the shadow of a doubt, that Richard Allen committed this crime. Because as hard as they want to try and make it look like he did, they're just not going to be able to do it. But I think if I just had to point out one thing about the evidence, and one thing I would want to leave you with, is that where the leg went underneath the other leg is where the phone was found. It was found inside a shoe turned upside down. That tells us a couple of things. They knew about the phone. It wasn't like she dropped it and it was found secretly. They knew what was on the phone, obviously, and they wanted that to be discovered. So everything that's on that phone, the guy on the bridge, the guy saying down the hill, they wanted the police to have that. Think about that.
Wow. And that's a very bold move on the killer's part.
Yes. But I believe there is a reason for it, which is the same reason that they told Elvis to spit on the girls. They were trying to make Elvis the patsy. But Carroll County, being as incompetent as they are, seemed to have messed up the messed up the evidence somehow, and they don't get a clear DNA out of it. So.
Wow. Okay, before we wrap it up, Rick, tell us a little bit about your podcast and how often we can find you and how far you go back. And do you have the history there where we can go search episodes? And is it YouTube only? Give us your info.
Well, right now it is YouTube only. You can find me at Delphi After Dark, or I believe you can also look up at RSNAY, and I think it'll come up that way too. But if you put in Delphi After Dark, you'll come up with me. I do. It's not just a strict true crime show. There is a lot of variety to it. Sometimes we have special guests. A lot of times, former President Bill Clinton stops in and has a little bit of a chat with us, and you know, things like that. There is a lot of comedy, but it's also very informative. I go back. This is what we call our third season. So I go back a couple of years. The earliest stuff is no longer available because it was a. It's a long story, but I was accusing someone back then who was innocent. So. I have moved on from that. So, but the right now, basically, it's when you go, it's all in, you know, the newer stuff is first, and the farther back you go, you'll get to the older stuff. The important stuff to look at is the recent stuff, like examining the Richard Allen probable cause affidavit. There are two episodes called Sticks and Stones and the Elephant in the Room. Those deal with the pictures, the crime scene photos. So, but those, and I probably do two or three videos a week is what I try to do. But I at least get one out every week. So, you know, and some of them, most of them are live streams, but I also do some pre-recorded stuff.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Rick, unfortunately, we know this is not over, and as far as we know, it could just be beginning, as there's been surprise after surprise and all kinds of stuff throughout this case and the judicial process as well. So hopefully you and I can continue to talk and educate and just keep people up to speed in a real-world attempt when this is happening right here in our backyard.
Right. I appreciate the opportunity to put the word out there and let people know about the show, and hopefully they'll find it and get a little interest out of it, something they can use.
All right. That is Rick Snay. He's the host of the podcast Delphi After Dark. Thanks again, Rick. Have a good day.
All right. You too.